Hey everyone, welcome to episode 144 of the Lift Free and Diet Hard podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Coates. I'm back to back today with recordings, but you're getting this a week later. I just had Dr. Sam Spinelli on, and today I've got my friend Eric Wong Kaipun, and he's in a unique role. I don't think I've ever had anybody who does quite what you do. And well, you are the director of personal training and the head of fitness education for Good Life Fitness. And Good Life is one of the biggest gym companies, fitness brands in the entire world. Right? People don't even realize that. I mean, Canadian powerhouse, you're all over Canada. But as far as the size of all these companies around the world, we're talking about Anytime Fitness, LA Fitness, Planet Fitness, you guys are in their league in terms of size.
Thanks for having me on, Andrew. Yeah, it's one of those, it's in Canada, right? So we're the biggest big box gym in one country across the globe. So that's that quant. And we're top four in the world based on number of locations. So yeah, it's up there for sure.
Which makes you guys a juggernaut. And you are the guy who is running everything for all the trainers, the education. And you and I have had a lot of conversations. I've been at events where you've been. We were just in Toronto together at the Canfit Pro 30th Anniversary Global Trade Show and Conference, which was incredible. I got to speak at it. And you guys are bringing in people like my friend Lee Boyce, who is there, Jordan Shallow Muscle Doc. He had a founder Prescript. He has done stuff with you guys in the past. I think you guys have had Eugene Tao. You have Michael Mash of Barbell Rehab, who is there. You work with a lot of great brands. I know you guys have talked with people like Molly Galbraith of Girls Gone Strong. And if you're talking with some of the leading educational providers, you're partnering with the best of the industry to bring the best knowledge to your trainers instead of taking an antagonistic view about educational resources that could potentially guide trainers into, you know, leaving a commercial gym. So I want to bridge to, I think this is really where we should start, is do you think coaches are missing an important phase of their career and important experience skills if they skip the step of working in the commercial gym? Because I'll preface this way. For a very long time, when you and I came up through, you know, before social media really proliferated, the path was you start in the commercial gym. And if you're going to leave, pretty much the only option was to go open your own facility. Now there's so much more, but trainers are no longer automatically starting in the commercial gyms. So is this a mistake?
I'll give the trainer answer of it depends. Depends for a few reasons. Like you said, I grew up in the industry in 2006. So that was the way you had to do it. You had to cut your teeth on that gym floor, spend your thousands of hours developing your coach's eye. There has obviously, in the past 5 years, been a boom when it comes to online coaching. Absolutely amazing to see us being able to help more people than we ever have helped before. But like you mentioned, there's some downsides to it. Potentially, retention rate is way lower online coaching than it is in person. And if you haven't spent those hours developing that coach's eye and developing that ability to understand that we work in a hospitality business, like, there's a great book called Unreasonable Hospitality. I think every trainer should read it because if we think we're in the service industry, we're actually about creating amazing experiences for our people. I'm going to see my clients in person 100 times in a year. So there's some power to that about creating an exceptional service where that hour is the best hour of their week, multiple hours, right? And then it's also, Lee Boyce often talks about this. I want to be exposed to a whole variety of people. If you jump into online coaching, what are you told? You're told to niche down. Have you ever heard that feedback given before, Andrew?
All the time. And I think it's highly overrated. I actually do think that to be successful in the online space, to stand out, there is potential wisdom. But I mean, for the coach who's just starting out, you're right. They're not getting exposed to a broad array of people. And here's my belief. And this comes from my friend Pete Dupuis, who's been very successful in, you know, gyms, is your niche finds you.
That's so well said, because all of us got into industry for the most part saying, I want to train athletes. I want to be able to push people hard, go at it, whatever it is. I did it. I came from that background, right? So we all do that. But then you have that one magical client, a year, 2 years in, okay, they're a rehab, and you see their eyes just light up. They can, I remember one of my clients, they were able to put their socks on for the first time by themselves in 5 years. So imagine this, every single morning, their wife had to wake up and put their socks on for them. those are the stories that change what your niche becomes, because, oh my gosh, I want to do this. I got this dopamine hit. That's so massive. I want to train these kind of clients.
And I really do agree with you. I mean, I spent 6 years on a commercial gym floor. There were ups and downs. You and I have talked about it, right? Like, and I want to get to this later. You know, there are problems that can exist with those environments. And oftentimes they can come organizational top down. Sometimes they're, you know, something to do with that specific location. But it was a great opportunity for me. I was transitioning careers. I loved working with the clients I work with. I got a very high volume of experience. And this is, you know, this is not a, I don't think Hormozy owns this, but he certainly has done a really good job of encapsulating it in the way he presents ideas. But there's a trade-off early in your career between earning potential and skills, right? And a lot of people, especially now, and I understand the economic reality of things where coaches feel, hey, I need to make money to pay my rent and pay for groceries. That's tougher than when I started. But also, you have to understand that early on, you're making a trade-off of sacrificing some of your earning potential to learn sales skills, training experience, and this stuff takes time. It takes reps, it takes volume, like literal reps. And I am where I am in a very big way because I got a lot of reps early and I got more comfortable with the sales process. I got great with referrals. I got just so many reps to just study the way humans moved. And despite my love of consuming training courses and information and reading stuff, I learned how to be a trainer because I watched how people moved and I adjusted based on that and assimilated then the things I was learning in coursework.
So do you remember your first paycheck you ever got in your big box gym when you started off there?
I don't, but it wasn't very much.
Mine was $243. So going from a world where having parents that wanted me to go to med school, the MCATs and all that stuff to jump into this, that was a hard pill to swallow. But thankfully, I was able to start pretty fast. And the good news is that, like, I had good life without trying to sell good life. New trainers that are certified are making $30 an hour now as trainers. That wasn't ever happening before. So I was talking to a trainer in the first year. Yeah, Eric, I'm on pace to make $55,000, $60,000 my first year. Like, take that. That's a massive win. Because most of the research shows that after $80,000, about maybe after inflation, especially in Canada, after the last 10 Bank of Canada increase in rates, maybe it's 90,000 now, right? But happiness doesn't change that much, if at all. In fact, if you go too much, there's actually more stress and you end up being less happy in general.
I mean, I think there's a level of being obsessed with pure money that if you develop an unhealthy relationship with just work. Like, I mean, I'm a workhorse, I'm a workaholic, right? And I like being busy and fulfilled by this stuff. But there comes a point where I had this conversation with Logan Dubé. You just listened to that episode where Logan talked about, you know, whether are these boundaries or are these, roadblocks. Thank you. Yeah, roadblocks. And I do think there's a newer generation of traders. I don't think they're softer. I just think that they're conscientious of a lot more things. They want to have a bigger impact faster. And I do think that a lot of them erect what they think are boundaries. They're actually erecting roadblocks. I got a friend, and I love how he said this. He's an old colleague of mine. He used to be a sales person at the old gym. And he's talking about, like, trainers worried about burnout. And he's like, don't worry about burnout. Worry about not starving, right? So my attitude has always been like, all right, don't starve, work, work, work. And then early on, this is relevant. I remember my first manager told me how many sessions an average trainer was doing, per pay period or whatever. And like roughly about like some sales numbers. So I internalized the number of sessions. So I worked towards it and I would hit it. And I pretty quickly realized this wasn't the average trainer session performance. This was the top trainer session performance, but it became the normal standard for me that for the next several years through my time there, I was a number one session volume trainer in the entire company year over year, right? And so that to me set a standard that I was willing to work at, and it established a pretty good livelihood. I do remember that my first year I made $40,000 Canadian, which, you know, adjusted for inflation is probably pretty comparable to what you just described.
Yeah, which is great at that time. Yeah, similar roadmap for me was 40,000 and 80 in my second year, and then keep on going upwards, right? So
You grew faster than I did. That's good.
Well, there's a lot to spin off of that. Let's start off with Intention Matters. One of the best books I've read recently is Talent Code.
Yes.
And there's a study by McPherson done on in regards to piano players. And it's kids in grade four playing the piano. It's the whole nature versus nurture debate. Is it who does well long-term in piano? Is it kids that are naturally talented to start off with? Or is it the kids that put in the hours? And they ended up after 10 years with a third reason. It was simple as what intention did they have when they first started? How long did they see themselves playing piano for? Being a personal trainer is ranked number one or two in the world for job satisfaction. You get paid to torture your clients and they like you for it. You get paid to hang out in gym clothes. So we tend to self-select towards this and you get to make a massive impact. You share on Instagram a few of your clients, Andrew, like, and you've had these clients for how long now?
You're probably alluding to maybe Larry, who's been
Larry,
with me about 4 years. He's the older gentleman, really strong. My client, Teresa, I sometimes share. Teresa's been training with me for over 12 years, almost my entire career. And I started with her sons and one of her son's best friends is one of the first clients I ever had. And that was a referral tree that's turned into over 20 clients. But Teresa still trains with me once a week like clockwork. And it's changed her life. She came to me. She thought she was too weak to train with me because her sons had trained with me. This woman is a dynamo. She's now in her early 60s. When she first came to me, she had just gotten over cancer. And she is an absolute rock star to work with. And I love working with her.
So you think about what you've helped her overcome. You think about all the referrals and connections you have. You know her better than almost anybody in her life. That's the power of what we do, is that you build these amazing relationships and they become, we're always taught, be friendly, but not friends. It can't help but happen. You spend 12 years in somebody, you're going to become friends.
Many of my closest friends are people who started out either as people I knew from the gym or clients early on. I have a lot of that. And that's one of those weird artificial boundaries that I don't think makes sense as a blanket rule. Go case by case.
Yeah. No, case by case. No, be careful in that first 6 months, whatever it is, because it's the honeymoon phase of a relationship and then things can go sour. But it's just going to naturally happen. You spend a decade with somebody, if you're not friends with them, ooh, that's a lot. Because my people average about 2.2 times per week with their clients. That's about 110, 120 sessions a year with every client. You don't see most of your friends that much.
Exactly. Yes.
So.
Take this further. Like, there's so much good here because here's where my thoughts are. And again, Logan and I were talking about this. Anybody wants to hear this episode first, go back to the Logan episode. Your guys are going to get a lot of context. I think that there are definitely people, good people who sell online coaching. Jonathan Goodman, Online Trainer Academy, like the first real big resource on that. John's a great friend. One of the speakers at my event coming up. But I think there are also other people who they wanted to get off the gym floor fast and then they wanted to scale online. I think there are great people who do a really good job of scaling online systems. But I think really some people were just in a rush to not work as much. They wanted to get off the gym floor and they didn't want to work as much. And if you're in this industry, you should be in it because you love doing it. Now, there's the other side of the spectrum where the coaches like who are uncomfortable talking about money and the business side of stuff because they're like, oh, no, I just want to help people. Listen, the business skills are essential to you being able to help people and earning a livelihood that keeps you in this game for the long run. I also believe, like you and I talk about, as Lee Boyce talks about, I think you can actually have a rich and lucrative long-term career as a coach on the floor. And some of the best business mentors that I'm friends with, people like Luca Hosovar, are still coaching in their businesses, even though they're doing a lot of other stuff.
100%. Lots of impact there. Yeah, The 4-Hour Work Week was a book that I loved and hated. It was great because for certain people, it's awesome. But it doesn't work for us because this is a passion play. Like, this fills my cup. I hang out with my friends who are trainers and fitness managers and divisional managers. We can't help talk about work because it's what we're fired up and passionate to talk about. It makes our wives upset. It makes everyone else around us upset. We make jokes about it. Like, okay, go to the other room. We're going to talk about work, give us an hour, and then we'll come back and play board games or whatever it is. That's just the way we work. a big part of my role right now is to create the pedagogy of how do I get trainers to be successful? Nick Lamb shared at Raise the Bar last year, 80% of trainers quit in their first year. You mentioned sales. Well, a massive part of it is imposter phenomenon. Do I believe I'm worth, like our packages we sell are about $8,000 starting off. Am I worth $5,000, $8,000? What makes someone say that, yeah, their goals might be worth it, but am I worth that? So if you jump ship before you've built that confidence of helping people out in the easiest method possible, you may learn sales tricks, but you're not going to get the servicing down solid. So think of it this way. In-person training, I can modify between reps, between sets, and give you a better product. Online coaching, in between sessions, maybe you send me three videos, I'll give you feedback on those three videos, there. So you get better every session almost, less intention behind it. Online programming, every 4-week block, you send a feedback form, I fill it out, I modify it. Where do you think you're most likely to be successful?
Here's my attitude towards online coaching, because I struggled with adopting online coaching until later in my career, because I didn't believe I could do it well. I have online clients that get better results than in-person clients, but here's the thing. It's the person who self-selects to the structure and style of the accountability of online. I think we can have greater impact in the lives, teach more, take the beginner, shape their experience, take them through a journey in person in a way that's very difficult to do online. I use a lot of voice and video messaging to build a relationship with my online clients, which is really just using some of the things that you're trying to mimic some of the things we would do in person, right?
Yeah.
But I think that a good coach can have an online offering if they develop those skills first from in person. I don't like gatekeeping because nowadays a lot of coaches are starting hybrid, the internet, social media is there. If we don't support them in trying to do that, somebody else will sell them a system, overpriced system that will, and make them promises and they're going to tune us out. So I don't believe in gatekeeping online. But I think that the richness of, this is something that people sometimes forget, and you've alluded to directly. Yes, it's about the client experience, right? I don't look at this, I talked about this with Logan. I don't look at this as, oh my God, I have to do, 1600 hours of training this year. Fuck. How about going 1600 hours of data entry? And not to disparage anybody who does some of these other jobs, but sweet Jesus Christ, no. I will take the unique, different experience and conversations that I get, and I'll punch those hours. Like that to me, I'm excited about. But I look at it and go, I get to spend that time with all these people, and this is enriching my life. It's not just about the client experience. It's about your trainer experience to stay in the game. And you said this about happiness and how happy trainers are. And I think it's because of what we get to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. Like a lot of my clients are still to this day mentors. Mm-hmm. Like when you charge a certain rate, you're going to attract people at certain stages of their life. So I've had real estate agents. I've had financial advisors. I've had people that I learned. I posted about today. What are the two topics each client loves talking about? I have to learn for each of my clients. I made a list of it. Each of my clients, what's the two topics each one individually loves talking about? Okay, I have to learn a bit about that. And they're going to go off for 20 hours of the year with me in between breaks and sets. So I'm going to learn a lot about that. So there's that enrichment of I get to be put around some of the best people in the world at what they do. Pretty awesome. And you talk about the happiness, the pay, the components of it. Like you said, I don't want to keep online coaching because I have some good friends that are crushing online coaching. A lot of people who when the bubble burst, they struggled. Can you find the right way in person to read somebody and learn about gamification? Can you learn about what are the little triggers I have to say to get them engaged? How do I read somebody? How do I use that empathy to figure out virtually, okay, how could this person be feeling? They missed their top set this past week. Okay, how is it affecting them? Those are things you learn from experience, I find. There are ways to acquire it elsewhere through mentorships, through other routes, but you better get coached if you're going to jump straight into online coaching.
I think so as well. I think there can be a bit of a false promise there. And I think we can look at the examples of the people who have disproportionate success. And oftentimes you don't see just how much experience they have in person. Again, I mentioned Don Saladino, who's very successful seven-figure business in the online space. You can learn a lot from him. Don ran a gym for 15 years. He punched a lot of sessions at Equinox very early in his career. He was also quite lucky to have someone recommend Hugh Jackman to him earlier in his career. Not everybody has that. And then through that, to get to work with Ryan Reynolds for years at a lot of other figures in Hollywood and work with, and I said this in the last episode too, but like people like Michael Bloomberg, and I'm pretty sure it was Calvin Klein that he coached, right? That's not the normal experience. So you're not going to replicate that. Or, you know, someone like a Jeanette Jenkins, who happens to be Pink's trainer, or, you know, so on and so forth. These people have blown up these big social medias, but you can still borrow lessons from them. Just, I think it's wise to think, all right, this is not the norm. I wouldn't put limitations on what you think you could achieve. But all these people still were successful with in-person coaching. And that was a backbone of all the skills that allowed them to then translate into online success.
Well, yes, because it ties into a big part of the in-person personal training, why it's so effective, is that you get exposed to a wide variety of clientele types. You have your injuries, you have your young warrior athletes, you have your stay-at-home dads and moms that just want to work off the 20, 30 pounds, a whole bunch of things, wide gamut. And you mentioned offline, but we can say it. It's like your specialty, your niche doesn't get chosen right away. It shouldn't be. You should figure out what clients get you excited, because it might surprise you as to who actually is.
Absolutely. No, please go on. Tell me more.
So, and it's spending those, for me, spend your 2 years, spend your 2,000 hours on the floor, first of all. Mm-hmm. Develop that coach's eye, develop that ability to figure out what your passion truly is. And then from there, I see it as three routes. Okay, we all want to make six figures in this industry. Good, let's do it. Am I going to become an educator? Am I going to be a manager slash leader slash business owner? Or am I going to become a specialist? Where do I want to dive into? And it can be a blend of all three. It's a Venn diagram where there's some cross-playing in the middle potentially. Where do I want to invest my time? You talk about the courses we bring in. Yeah, bring in the best of the best. Because I want to give people that career path of, we have people that work for us that are internal course providers or external course providers. We have people that go into management or people that are making six figures being trainers. Where do you want to go?
And, you know, if let's actually talk about this one. I think if you could make six figures working within a company, then that's great. And again, I remember working for a company doing very, very well within their system, but I knew that that company was going in the wrong direction. There were institutionalized problems and I knew I needed to leave, and I stayed longer than most, like on average, but I knew I needed to leave, and they realized, whoops, that was a big mistake. And then a lot of trainers followed me out the door. We had a little power outage, guys. I apologize. We're going to get right back to it. So Eric and I were talking about, you know, some of the things to look for in a commercial gym environment. If you're going to be an employee in these environments long-term, there's obviously going to be some things that are going to make you want to stay. And then there are going to be some things that might make you want to say, that's going to be a problem. You know, and let's say it explicitly. I've seen abuses. I've seen predatory sexual harassment. I've seen predatory multi-level marketing recruitment and other things like that. But are there any other things that trainers should be looking for as non-negotiables to stay long-term? Or, you know, certainly trainer characteristics that would really suit and thrive to stay within the commercial gym environment long-term?
A few things pop to mind. One avenue I can take is that we know that people join a gym because of the brand. They leave because of their manager. So who you are joining a gym with, it's critical that you know, like Good Life has about 180 gyms. Not all 180 fitness managers are created equal. Who am I working for? I'm essentially getting mentored by this fitness manager. Is this the person that's going to connect well with me? They may be great for somebody else, but they're not great for me. The other thing is, if I'm training a client for powerlifting, I always ask them, are you the strongest person in your gym? If so, find another gym. Okay, who are the 3-4 people around you that are going to drive, that you're going to work together with, and create the right environment where you grow together and learn together. It's not just about the manager. It's about those 4 or 5 key trainers around you. Like you had Dean next to you, right? For a long time.
Dean and I were in the same company, different locations, but I had access to Dean Summers. That's continuing education. That was huge.
So that's a massive component that causes you to stick, is that I want to be around people that are like-minded that go after it. And when if I have a manager who doesn't have high standards, that's an issue. Because one person wearing that shirt that doesn't have the right core values, that affects every member's view of personal training in that club. We work in a fishbowl. That one drop of oil in there will ruin the entire ocean. So that's one thing. The next thing I look at is from a trainer perspective. What kind of characteristics would I have to want to stay? If I have an avenue to have a greater impact. I often get asked, Eric, why are you still at Good Life? You've had different offers, different things. My answer is, I get to have a massive impact. I get to scale up through the company and have an impact. And my trainers can as well, either as specialists who lead by example, as educators, or as managers and leaders. So is there the growth pattern? Do I want to grow in this company potentially? And is there a bit of me that's risk adverse? You mentioned yourself, Andrew, that you have an entrepreneurial mindset. If I hate change, I'm risk adverse, this is a great spot because we can weather the storm. Good Life's been through the recession of 2008. We know the exact playbook it takes to weather a recession. Well, during the pandemic, how many gyms closed in Edmonton close to you?
There were some, and the gym chain that I used to work at, who had been struggling for years, they did go under. Now, there was a lot of stuff leading into that stuff, and I think there was a lot of questionable stuff. I won't get too explicit. I know just like on my location level, there was a lot of really bad stuff going on, right, for a long time. But what happened is they were already in a weakened position as LA Fitness had come in and established a few locations. Good Life is growing more and more. And Good Life came into Edmonton late because, as I understand the story, there's two sets of owners of the old company that I used to work for. And Patch, who I got to meet, the owner of Good Life at the event, a couple weeks ago, which was really cool, was close friends with one of those owners. And if I understand, I may be incorrect, but as I understood it, that because they were friends and this owner had these locations in that city, Good Life did not go into that city until later on when that company had been sold. So Calgary had a stronger footprint of Good Life, but Good Life has been going into Edmonton, I think probably for the last like about 14 years is I think when they first went in there. And has been growing. They recently opened a new location in Commerce Place. I know the managers, that my friends, Kate and Gil, they're really wonderful. They were both at the event in Toronto. And what do you got? You now have a Movati location in Edmonton growing out of the first location outside of Ontario. More recently, now this wasn't relevant to it, but Planet Fitness all of a sudden has gotten into Alberta because someone held the legal name Planet Fitness to Alberta. And there was a long protracted legal thing that kept Planet Fitness out of there. And Anytime swept in a while back, knocked out a lot of the Snap locations. And then, so a lot of this dynamic stuff's going on and you have this former leader who is really complacent and not necessarily investing in upgrading facilities and whatnot, had turned around and gradually lost market share. And then they were in a very vulnerable position. And what happened? Pandemic comes in, knocks them out, right?
Well, yeah, all high tides raises all boats, right? Unfortunately, when that tide goes down, we see what's exposed. Ian Logan talking about how this not the it's good to share the struggles that people have right now when it comes to doing well. We're lucky. We set records last year. Our fiscal year is very strange. It goes July to June. So that's just recent. We have people that sold over $700,000 of personal training themselves as one person. I never thought that was possible and doable. But the marketplace is right with the right marketing initiatives, different things. And it's understanding that the goals of 2019 aren't the goals of 2023 for clients. There's a massive shift towards mental health, mental focus, mental performance. People want that now. If you haven't shifted with that, that's a massive opportunity.
Metabolic health, right? How many people put on a bunch of weight, were inactive during that time frame? And I think just because we now understand there's a very strong relationship between someone's metabolic health and, you know, there's a lot of like stuff about comorbidities, but the reality is there's a very strong relationship between your cardiovascular health, your strength, and your metabolic health, which can lead to, over time, the development of prediabetes, diabetes, heart conditions. There are certain cancers that are related to lifestyle behavior. There's a relationship now with dementia, which of course is a big scary boogeyman that goes like long-term. And people are alert to the fact that, okay, their physical health and mental health really suffer during this stuff. And the people who had poorer metabolic health due to sometimes the stuff totally beyond their control, but let's be honest, as across a population, there's a lot we can do to control our metabolic health, right? On an individual level, there's a lot you can do. So what happened? Those people who had poor metabolic health were disproportionately hurt and killed by a nasty virus. So we now know, okay, you know, we, for all of the other stuff, whatever someone's opinion on the complicated nature of the medical interventions, because that's like contentious shit that like shouldn't be. But what we do know is, hey, if you take control of what you can control, which is to be more active, get stronger, you're actually less likely to suffer a bad outcome of this thing. And that was a controversial thing early in this, which is sort of ludicrous, but it's no longer controversial. We now know this to be real. So people are more willing to invest in, you know, their health.
They are. And that's part of like the half-life of facts in our industry is about 7-8 years. So that means that a fact of the, of all 100 facts that exist about certain things, half of them are going to be either outgrown or proven wrong in an 8-year span. We date ourselves by saying how long in the industry for, but okay, I grew up in a world where if you did cardio on the low intensity steady state cardio, you were killing your gains. And the dirty electricity from the from that treadmill was actually making you increasing your cortisol, which caused you to gain fat. Okay. This was from some of the top course providers in the world at the time. Low intensity steady state's great. Heart health, we know HIIT training does not improve your heart health as well as low intensity steady state. So finding that right blend as a trainer is massive. There's so many avenues you can tap into. You nailed it perfectly. Metabolic wise, part of our job is to make sure people are resilient. I can acknowledge the fact that people have mental stress, anxiety, stress, depression, all that stuff. Okay, I can label it, but then my job as a trainer is let's make you resilient. Let's make sure you can withstand. As a parent, I've got a 7-year-old. My job is not to snowplow the way in front of her. I actually drop little things in front of her to make her trip and fall. Luca put it really well, trip over their truths. How do they learn and grow and develop? So one of your presenters, Logan Dubé, did a great job creating finishers for us. Here are three avenues you can go into finishers. Is it going to be for that muscle pump? Because I want to look great. My arms and triceps, let's look great going for the weekend. Awesome. Is it that person that wants a cardio burn type of training? Or is it someone who needs down regulation because their cortisol is for the roof? They need to come down here. We can do a flow that brings them down. Those are the things that we can do as trainers to really impact our clients.
And these are all things that I think you guys at Good Life are providing really good a foundation for education. And I mean, the stability, there is a little bit of an illusion in stability, right? I think the book Anti-Fragile kind of talks about this well.
It does.
I think the best way to be stable in terms of your income is to just ramp up the high end of your earning potential so high with skills and work ethic that you overwhelm the costs out, right? So, you know, your lifestyle costs, guess what? Make so much damn money because you're so damn skilled and you're willing to work hard that you're not worried about paying next month's bills. It's where I think that the promise of charging a monthly rate for your coaching for in-person, I think is a little bit of a lie. I've never liked that. I think it can work and I've used it in very sparing things. But I'm good with the old session model. People think the commercial gym session model, oh, that's no good, blah, blah, blah. And the people selling you that line, what they're really trying to do is they're trying to sell you their system to sell you something. There's discomfort from the trainer worried about the inconsistency of their income, right? And you think that, okay, I'm going to have stability in my income if I just charge a monthly rate instead of session rate. That's bullshit. That's total bullshit. You know what will give you stability is skills, great client relationships, all the stuff we talked about earlier. I think that working in a commercial gym can actually smooth it out because you have additional resources like the brand name and the foot traffic of that brand. And hopefully that will help fill your schedule if you are not necessarily someone like me who does really well based on referral business, right? If you don't want to do some of that extra stuff in the media, guess what? If you have an organization backing you, that can really provide a lot of stability. Like, I value that for a lot of people.
It's massive because when I first started as a trainer, I'd done high-level coaching, but I'd never really charged for my sessions myself. I got paid a flat rate and I did that. So I went 0 for 43 my first 2 months as a trainer. I could not close a consult, save my life. And I couldn't do it. So I had to dive in and master my craft. And I find the trainers that have to master their craft are the ones who stay long-term. Whereas the ones who are able to sell really naturally and easily, they struggle at the service side of things, the connections. So when a new trainer starts, I always think about, we know the number one factor is their confidence. Do they have the right intention of staying long-term? And are they confident? If those two things are taken care of, they're going to find a way to win. Because you and I, you just talked about it. A massive part of what you do, Andrew, is soft skills. Your ability to connect, to find the right way, the right cue for Larry, to find a way to connect with Teresa, all those things are massive. But do trainers want that in the first year or 2 years? It's not as big as a priority to boost their confidence. They want to dive into technique, program design, periodization, all those things that wave versus linear versus concurrent versus daily undulated periodization. My clients have no idea what the hell I'm talking about when I dive into that with them.
That shit don't matter. Like, periodization, like, as a specific thing. And I think what it is like, a lot of us are nerds about this stuff. You get people like Mark Fisher, brilliant, successful business person, great coach, you know, nerd about training stuff. Luca, brilliant when it comes to people. He's a nerd about training. But where do coaches like to go? More education on things they're already strong at. And if it's the biomechanics stuff and all of the programming stuff, they're going to go do more of it. If they love nutrition, they're going to go do more nutrition. It's the human skills. It's the business skills. And this is, again, we've been talking a little bit about my event in October 13th and 14th. If you guys want information, like, literally, if you've been listening to any of my other recent episodes with Logan and Sam Spinelli, guess what? We're talking lots about it. But they're going to be good life trainers there. And I've referred new coaches wanting to get into the industry to Good Life. I didn't say come start at Evolve as a fresh trainer, start your own business. I said, go learn these skills at Good Life because this is where you need to be. Like, I'm a big believer in this. You know, we're going to have some Good Life people, boots on the ground at our event. We'll have a bunch of trainers in there. Like, I'm a big believer in what you guys do. I'm a member of Good Life. I like working out there. So I wanted to make sure I pivoted to that too, because I have this abundance mindset about the relationships in the industry as a whole. I know, well, I kind of went off course there, but
it's totally fine. Cause, like, I know most people that are presenting at your conference. I've worked with them specifically individually for a lot of them. Like John Goodman, when he drops nuggets about his four tiers of content creation, write that down and please own that. When Don talks about how to create transformation challenges, write that down. When Lee talks about how do you stay on the floor for 15 years and what are the little things that matter, there are nuggets that are going to be dropped. Kelsey jumping into how do you create the right, like, to see her role play live. First of all, she's amazing at nailing a script out because she has so many reps at it. But your email marketing, your email campaigns, that's massive. I can go off and Luca, he just makes everything cool. So it's just Luca, right? Between Dean and his shoulder blueprint and his hip stuff, you can just go through the list. Krista and motivational interviewing. Jordan, and if you want to rabbit hole anything about biomechanics, talk to that guy and you will go get lost for 6 hours.
Yep.
So you've put together a stellar list, Andrew, and great job with that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I'm proud of it. I'm a big believer in, like you said earlier, all ships rise with high tides. I really do want to be a positive influence on the industry as a whole. Anybody listening to this knows how I like to share other people. I think our industry is full of great people. And the event put together a lot of industry leaders. I would have loved to have had more bandwidth to, like, highlight more rising stars, but yeah. I ultimately had the choice of, you know, a couple of hundred amazing people, and I had to somehow winnow it down to 14 presentations. Kelsey and Dennis will do one together, so 15 speakers. And, you know, when I did this event in 2019 with Evolve and our original partners, I didn't even put myself in a speaking lineup. I am seated. I had not up to that point been invited to speak anywhere and I didn't feel ready. So I did not include myself in the lineup. I've gotten lots of invitations, done a ton of it. You guys invited me to speak at yours in Toronto. So finally, now I've earned the right to speak at my own event. So, you know, for the people who've been like knocking on the door going, hey, can I come speak? Guess what? You actually need to be in the seats, attending, meeting these people. Because I did that for years without the intention of speaking at these things. And I kept showing up and supporting people to the point where like, listen, I want you on this stage. And I was like, holy shit. So come see us. If you're a trainer who's listening to this, especially if like you're somebody really new, you know, I got one better. Anyone listening, if you've got someone in your world who is just starting out, fresh trainer, someone who's interested in this, someone who's going to school, someone who's asking questions, or you're an enthusiast who's thinking about starting as a coach, especially if you're Canadian, I want you to go follow Eric. I'll get him to tell everybody where to follow you. But I want you to follow Eric and I want you to check out if Good Life is an option for you to start your career, because you may actually end up sticking around there and having a really fulfilling one, like a guy like Chris Fudge, who has excelled in your guys' system. I was on a panel with Chris, hung out with him in Toronto. He's a great guy. Or it could be a stepping stone to something else. You could, you know, end up with a career like mine, where I spent 6 years in the system, which is longer than I think a lot of the people in my space. But it served me well, and I left when I was ready. So, Eric, where can they find you?
Instagram is probably the easiest. I'm most active there. LinkedIn works as well. But and it's at Eric, E-R-I-C-W-K-P.
W-K-P. Yeah. W-K-R-P in Cincinnati. No, W-K-P. That's what I think of, right? I'm that old. Everybody tuning in, thank you again. And I'm dead serious. The way you can actually help me with this, the way that you can help the person you'd be sharing this with, is to find that person who you think, hey, I know someone who's probably early in their career or wants to get started. Share this very specific episode and Eric with that person. One little ask, and you're going to be doing that person a big favor. I'm channeling some Hormozy here. You know, I like the way he does that on his media. Guys, thanks for tuning in again. I appreciate it. If you have any questions about my event in October 13th, 14th in Edmonton, shoot me a message. I would be thrilled to answer your questions and see you there live. Eric, thank you so much.